Welcome to the Developer Tribe, where we delve into the process and practice of coaches, educators, and beyond. We're here at episode 4 of season 3 already, and today exploring what meaning and meaningful might mean in the world of sports coaching. What has meaning for me right now is having launched Recode, our multiple mentor network, in which we help coaches and teachers create their own meaningful reality. You can now join our own online space at thedevelopertribe.mn.co. Not only to find out more about that service, but also to join in with others at the tribe to discuss and unpack practice. We hope to welcome you into the tribe soon. As ever, my thanks for your support, for listening, and for being here however you got here. And with that, let's jump in. My guest today is a researcher, author, and lecturer at the University of Bern in Switzerland, with previous research positions in Finland, Norway, England, China, and Denmark. Her research spans existential learning, meaning and spirituality in sport and exercise, and career and identity, to name just a few of the topics she has covered so far. Her work in meaning and spirituality from psychological perspectives is available in published form in a co-authored book with Dr. Mark Nesty. It's my pleasure to welcome to the pod Dr. Noora Ronkainen. How are we doing?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for the invitation. Like, I've listened to your episodes and I think it's a really nice show. So
I look forward to
seeing where we go. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. What emerges from the conversation? That obviously you host your own podcast as well. Do you want to tell us about that first?
Yeah, so the Physical Activity Researcher podcast has been around for about two years almost at the moment. I'm doing a thematic series with the title Meaningful Sport. And so I think we are talking about those related themes today. But so I've had that one has been going on since last summer. And so if people are interested in those themes, there are some really brilliant people who were in that show as well. So if you're interested in what we talk about today, that might be like a additional thing at some point to check out. Yeah,
absolutely. I'll put the links to them. It's a fascinating series, and also fascinating that you've moved so frequently in your research career. Has that been out of necessity or opportunity?
Yeah, I think in academic life it's both. Like, coming from a small country like Finland, it's not that you have like loads of opportunities coming up. There is one sports science university in Finland, which is in Jyväskylä. And so other than that, there aren't like loads of opportunities if you want to be a researcher in the area of sport. But on the other hand, like, I always loved traveling. I was already, a master's student, I spent a year as an exchange student in Prague. And then like a bit later on with my second master's, so my first, I studied theology and I did a master's degree in that. Maybe it's worth mentioning, it's a little bit unusual for somebody who is researching sport. And yeah, the second master's was sport and exercise psychology, and I spent a semester in Greece in Tricola. And those were like, I just really wanted to explore and see and travel around and those things. So I was certainly open for moving and looking for what are the things I can do maybe elsewhere. So I think it's a mix of both, as in most people's lives.
Sure. And it's such an interesting journey, and the impact that you're having on multiple spaces in sport research is so impressive. And I'm sure we'll see a lot more from you once you take up your residence in Switzerland. I'm really excited today, as you mentioned, to unpack with you your work behind coaching careers and meaning in coaching. I know that obviously you spend some time on that with regards to athletes as well, but specifically for coaches, if we can concentrate on that today, what does meaningful mean in the context of coaching?
Yeah, that's a really, really interesting question. And actually, we haven't studied these things a lot in the sport context. So I think it's a very exciting time to do this work. And I'm planning to like do some broader studies in the next few years in this area. But so I think if we start thinking of, we can talk about meaning and we can talk about meaningful. And so basically we can say that sport has different meanings. Sport could be about fun or joy or challenge or struggle. Those would be different meanings that are associated with sport. But then those are not all meanings are equal in terms of what is meaningful. So I think that idea has been articulated in the world of work, that, you know, some people see their work as being a burden or a curse or something that you just have to do. And those types of meanings in work don't make work very meaningful. So typically that meaningfulness aspect has been seen, that kind of subjective evaluation of what I'm doing is something that is very worthwhile and significant. Typically, we see in the meaningful work literature that people also experience work as meaningful when it has some kind of higher purpose or helping other people or somehow making the world in some ways a better place. And those can be various ways. And what in meaningful work literature has been emphasized, that various types of work can be meaningful. So traditionally, for example, there have been these old vocations like teaching or law or being a doctor and those kind of things that are kind of easy to think about being those professions that make world a better place or help other people. But so now in the meaningful work literature, there have been loads of interest in various types of occupations, and we can see that this meaningful work idea is relevant to a lot of people. And that was my thought as well, that coaching is certainly a context where I would expect that people find a lot of meaning, especially if you think of amateur coaches in many sports in Europe. There is a long tradition of having amateur sport cultures where all the coaches and others involved are volunteers. So basically you are giving your time, you're not being paid for it, you don't have to do it. So it's something that you really that you are pulled towards, maybe. And so I'm not saying that paid work cannot be meaningful. Of course it can be meaningful, and we do see that it is very meaningful for many people. But so I thought that especially when we see that volunteer work is also something that makes many people's lives meaningful. So I thought that probably there are a lot of things in sport coaching that can be thought about through that lens of thinking of what makes working meaningful.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And with my research that I'm doing at the moment, there's a few papers on coach developers that looks at their lifespan, how they became coach developers. And although it's a very small space, the couple of common themes that came up were around this idea of social responsibility, that having had that first fascination with the sport, then socialization via the sport through playing and then coaching, that there was this idea of wanting to give back to the sport that has given them so much. And when I read the word social responsibility, I really thought, well, that meaningful probably makes a little bit more impact in terms of the language that we're using here. Responsibility to me sounds like a little bit like you were saying about maybe it's a burden.
That meaningfulness word seems to be something that resonates with people, and I've a lot of people got in touch and they said that there was something about that work that was something that, you know, you can relate to many of the things that are in that work, but maybe you haven't used that kind of language to think about. Although I think, and now we probably start delving a little bit more into that work that I was doing, that meaningful, having some work that is very meaningful for you doesn't mean that there aren't some struggles or also this feeling of responsibility. And that's some of the, especially some of the older coaches, they were telling me that they just really feel a responsibility to be there for the young people. So maybe there was nobody else who could have done the job. And if they are not doing the training sessions, then nobody is doing those sessions. If we were talking about like small disciplines in athletics, for example. So that kind of responsibility. And there is a classic study in the meaningful work literature, which is about zookeepers, interestingly. And for them, that was also highly meaningful work, but there was a lot of responsibility for the well-being of the animals, and a lot of these workers were sacrificing their personal time and not having a good salary for what they are doing. But they just felt a really strong responsibility to be there and care for the animals. So maybe when you asked about responsibility and meaningfulness, probably both of those things are in some ways also related. Yeah.
Right. So it's not, yes, meaning being meaningful doesn't necessarily mean just positive. It doesn't mean that it's unproblematic.
Yeah, absolutely. And now there are more studies coming out that are looking at a little bit like the dark side of meaningful work. So people who experience work to be very meaningful are more easily exploited, so they can accept, you know, worse working conditions because they are so attached to their work. And so that, and they can also maybe prioritize work over everything else in life, and that can have a very detrimental effect on your family as well. So certainly it has some problematic dimensions to that as well. But predominantly the literature, again, in the work context, because we don't have so many studies in sport, seem to indicate that having this sense of what you're doing is meaningful and worthwhile seems to be a very good thing for you overall, most often. Yeah.
Most of the time. So, I mean, yeah, some of what you touched on there in terms of maybe leading towards exploitation or burnout, I mean, it's very, very prevalent. And even on this podcast, I've spoken to people about, you know, cases of burnout, including my own. But yeah, leading towards more of those positive sides of it, is meaningful, or finding meaning in the work of being a sports coach, is it something that, and I appreciate you said there's not a lot of research in it, in your opinion, and in the little research you have done, is it something that's inherent or something that can be developed? Is there a lifespan to it?
Yeah. So I think where do we start? That's such a tricky question. So, I mean, I've always been drawn to this narrative theory, narrative work, and there's a lot of excellent work, for example, by Katrina Douglas and Brett Smith and Andrew Sparks and all of these really pioneers in the narrative study of athletes' lives. And so basically what they are really lifting to the forefront, that the cultural narratives that surround us are the building blocks for our own stories and for us to find meaning. And so basically being involved in sport, that gives like a certain type of repertoire for us to draw on and to start constructing our own story, which might be some kind of mix and a selective collection of those cultural stories that are out there. And of course, it's unique because it's your own story, but the ways that you are putting it together is always relying on these cultural narratives that are out there. And to answer your question, in that sense, of course, meanings can change. We can always hear stories of others that really can help us to reflect on our own lives and maybe find a different type of perspective on our lives. So maybe you read an athlete's biography and they had some experiences that you can relate to, but they are bringing a different type of story to that and a different type of meaning to that kind of experience. And maybe that can help you to reflect on your own life and maybe restory it. So find a different way of developing a story around what has happened to you or your coaching career, for example. And in that sense, meanings certainly change over the lifespan. And I think another important thing maybe to mention is that from developmental psychology perspective, we have these different life stages where we have different developmental tasks. So we often in sport context, we talk about adolescence and identity development being the key task of that point. But also I think from meaning perspective and what narrative scholars are often emphasizing, that these developmental tasks are culturally scripted. So they are expectations about what you are supposed to do in this time of your life. And so when you are young, you are supposed to be exploring and, you know, perhaps choosing an occupation, studying something, playing sport and those things. And in some ways we can say that those are the things that you are typically supposed to find meaning from. Whereas then when you get older, you are supposedly shifting to this more relational mode of being. Maybe you have a family, maybe you have become a coach, and then you are more in this caring role and providing coaching athletes and, you know, giving back to the sport, which is something that you already said about. So in some ways, I would say that in our cultures, we also have these culturally scripted ways that you are supposed to find meaning. And I found it really interesting when I was looking at masters athletics. Now we go to slightly off the topic, but so some of the coaches felt that people who continue doing sports and they don't become volunteers or coaches in the club, that they are actually being selfish, because what you're supposed to do is that you are supposed to give back to the sport, which is the story that we always hear. Whereas if you continue focusing on yourself and chasing your own achievements in the master's athletics context, that would be a wrong type of meaning for you to pursue in later life. If does it make any sense? But yeah.
No, yeah. Sure it does. And so master's athletics or athletes being, you know, older age.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the constraints that are put upon them culturally, makes it difficult for them to pursue that line. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah. Yeah. So for example, there is a lot of brilliant work on master's athletics and narratives of aging and how the dominant narrative has been about this aging as decline and what are like the things that people are supposed to do in later life. And like in a traditionally sport was not one of the things that old people, older adults are supposed to do. And obviously we now have all master's athletics and we have these wonderful role models who are like really fantastic athletes who are in their 60s or 70s and older and older than that. But so I think that's kind of the normative life course in sport that we have, is that when you're young, then you're an athlete, then you're pursuing your own athletic career. And then when you move on and become older, then you are supposed to be shifting to that giving back to sport role. And then people who don't do that, who don't live up to this normative life career in sport, some people might feel, for example, that they are selfish. So there are these restrictions of what kind of meanings are being validated and which meanings are being marginalized.
I guess it gets me thinking about operating as a coach developer and what awareness do we need to have of this idea of meaningful and meaning in coaching? And what you said there of it being culturally scripted. So in my experiences of being over in the States, that working with coaches there with soccer, I was at least partly aware of it's a very different game than what is played here in the UK. That certain expectations of what youth football or youth soccer looks like is very different. And it was interesting to have to navigate that, to try and help the coaches that I was working with, or to try and be an effective coach developer. So it strikes me that it's not just important about figuring out our own sense of what is meaningful, why we are operating as a coach developer, but also how aware can I become about the coach's sense of meaningfulness that I'm working with.
Yeah, and I mean, we shouldn't be always expecting that what is meaningful to me is going to be automatically meaningful to you, because all of those things there are various, our life experiences, what kind of families we grew up in, what kind of sport culture we have grown up in. And you already mentioned that there are these national culture related differences as well. And I think relevant for our conversation today is that we can also think about what is the impact of professionalization of sport coaching for the types of meanings that people find in coaching. So even if, of course, that sense of meaningfulness is something that is felt to be very personal, and of course it is unique and personal, but always these cultural and more structural forces that are around us always have an impact on what kind of meanings can be constructed and what meanings are being validated. And yeah, maybe a few words of that professionalization if you want to go that direction.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's an interesting one from a UK perspective. Again, I'm sure the listeners will forgive me that I'm so embedded in football. But you know, grassroots sport is so important. It's valorized in places, and there's kind of a conflicting identity as to whether it's a really, really good thing and we should be putting as much behind it as we can, to actually volunteerism doesn't really work. So yes, I'm very happy to talk about it.
Yeah. So when I was doing some interviews with different coaches, so in Finland and in the UK, and I had athletics, so track and field and ice hockey and in Finland and football in the UK. And so when I was thinking about how can I somehow start to tap into this sense of meaning, what kind of meaning do people find from sport coaching? And this classic work in meaningful work literature or psychology of work is, I think it's Bellach et al. It's called The Habits of the Heart. And they are talking about people having three different orientations to work. So basically, you could sense that your work is a job, a career, or a calling. And I guess most of those are, we have like an intuitive sense of what those words mean. In our culture, so job is something that it pays the bills, but you are not like highly personally invested. So when the day is done, you go home and then you have your free time. Career is something that is about, there is this sense that you are progressing to somewhere. So we talk about career ladders and making that next step and those things. I think in UK, having been at Liverpool, John Moores University for 3 years. So first as a visiting PhD researcher and then a postdoc, and maybe some of the ways that academic careers are talked about, there is a lot of these metaphors about career. So I thought that that was maybe stronger than in the Nordic countries, maybe the ways that academic life is talked about in terms of making the next step and all those things. And then vocation is this vocational calling is then something that almost at work has a higher purpose. We like traditionally it comes from Luther and Protestant theology. So it's like a calling from God to do certain line of work. But in current, I mean, people in nowadays, they talk about vocations and callings, even if they are not members of any particular religion. So that kind of the way that the words are being used and understood is broader than that kind of religious calling. So it can be more about like fulfilling yourself or kind of expressing your some inner passion for something. So you could talk about that being a calling. And so I started asking the sport coaches, just trying to get like some, how do I grasp something that is so difficult to grasp as meaning? So I just asked them to, if they would have to think about the word for what they are doing as sport coaches. So would they consider that being a hobby or a career or maybe a calling, or a lot of them were amateurs, so like job might not be so relevant for them. Or if none of these words like really describe what you are doing, that subjective sense of what it is, maybe they could just give me some other word or just try to describe it in a different way. And so, yeah, I got loads of interesting answers. I always followed up. So if they said that it's my career or it's my calling, I would then just ask them to, if they could just please explain, tell me a little bit more, what does that mean to you to be using that word? And yeah, I mean, in athletics, where most of the coaches were volunteers, not all of them, but most of them were volunteers who I talked to, they would often talk about hobby. So hobby is not something that you get paid for. And some of the older coaches were actually really proud of not being paid. So, you know, in some ways your motives are being more pure because you're not doing it for the money. So they really wanted me to know that they are not getting paid for it. And there are other reasons for them to do it. But then I think some coaches who were in football and also in athletics, what they were saying that either coaching is a career or it should be considered a career, because that gives it some more legitimacy. So if we culturally think of coaching just a hobby, it doesn't sound very serious and the coach doesn't seem to be very professional. And so in that sense, if we talked about coaching, for example, as a career or as a profession, then many of these coaches felt that then it would get more legitimacy. And that's why they felt that that would be important. But also, I think in that football context, many of the coaches also felt that it is a career and they were looking for how can I make that next step. And they were very aware that there are loads of other coaches who are also looking to make that next step. And they were talking about that competition and you know, in some ways, almost like the young players, that there are loads of these studies about footballers in football academies and how everybody in your team is a competitor for you and whether they are your real friends and you know, which one of you is going to make the next step, because that might also mean that the others will not. And so I think some of those harmful things about careers being there is this strong sense of competition and success means that you have to make that next step. Whereas the coaches who felt that coaching is a vocation, they didn't worry about making a next step. So because most of them talked about they want to give back to the sport, they want to help that club to keep going to the future generations. I mean, many of them, of course, also wanted their athletes to succeed. And there are some, we know that volunteer workers are not completely altruistic. So they also get sense of recognition and success from doing well. But so most often these coaches who talked about the hobby or a vocational calling, they wouldn't talk about that competition between the coaches or who is going to get to that next ladder and who is not. So in some ways that career metaphor also has these not so positive connotations, but that's maybe something that becomes, maybe coaches are starting to think of coaching a lot more as a career because of the professionalization and the structural change that we are seeing in many sports.
Yeah, it's a thorny topic. There's a lot of it feels to me like there are significant pros and cons, and that
absolutely.
When I spoke recently with Alfie Berntsen, who's a coach in Norway, and both on this pod and then separately, and in a separate conversation, we spoke about, you know, the sense of volunteerism, and that at least within the confines of Norway, that there weren't those similar issues of not wanting to see themselves as professional, despite the fact that they were volunteer coaches. And that is something that appears elsewhere in other cultural contexts and cultural confines. So, I mean, it's just fascinating. And I was even thinking as you were speaking there that, of course, it's not just the macro level of, you know, the country or the particular sport. It'll be within club as well that they'll develop their own sense of what is meaningful.
Yeah, absolutely. And just like you said, there are these pros and cons. And I think in my research, it's about 40 coaches that took part in these various sports. And certainly these opinions are quite divided. And some of the benefits, we all know about those benefits. So coaches are better educated. They will be better prepared and just like I said, educated to work with young athletes. That's certainly a good thing. So thinking of, you know, health and prevention of injuries and all this psychological, being aware of that aspect of sport coaching as well. So it's not somebody who doesn't have like any experience working with children. So of course we see all these benefits. And I mean, clubs can get more resources and grow and offer activities to a broader group of people. Those are like these big benefits. But I think what is important for us is to think about like what ways do the meanings that people assign to working in sport or being a sport coach, in what ways do these meanings change? And in my work, it was most often the older coaches who talked about vocation or calling. So they were the ones who've been involved in sport for first as an athlete and then maybe for several decades as coaches. And we don't know. I've just done one interview with each person, so we can speculate why it is. So it could be that, you know, many of the young coaches talked about coaching as a hobby. So they don't have a lot of experience. They don't have this kind of very strong attachment to it. Maybe in 30 years, they will also talk about coaching as a vocation or a calling. So maybe they will reflect on their experiences and maybe develop a deeper relationship and with what they are doing and find these kind of deeper meanings that were not maybe evident when they were starting out. Other option is that as we are, of course, moving, the professionalization is something that is going on. And I wouldn't see that it's something that is stopping. And so it could be that in a more permanent basis, these meanings that people typically assign to coaching, that might be also changing. But we don't know that really well. But I think those are quite important questions for us to be asking. And just to say that this vocation and calling are often in the meaningful work literature seen as these strongest expressions of meaningful work when you experience your work as a calling. And so I'm sure that there are opportunities to experience work as a sport coaching as a vocation or a calling, even if you are being paid for it. But I think we need to think carefully about what are those different developments that might be threatening coaches' ability to find meaning and develop this deep relationship with what they do.
Yeah, and that's really where I wanted to go with this now, that if we are moving towards a higher level of professionalization, and I agree with you, I think that's the journey we're probably taking. To what degree and what role should or do national governing bodies need to take in this process of coaches developing meaning? Let me unpack that a little bit more. That say perhaps the movements towards more learner-centered teaching approaches and games-based approaches, that kind of thing, that was at least suggested to offer more autonomy, supportive behaviors, more agency to young athletes, that can become part and parcel of the meaning that a coach generates as to why they do what they do and how they do it. It feels to me like within this idea of kind of different developmental psychological tasks, that we have to be quite careful as to how much we're impacting that.
In terms of where we think that people should be in terms of their life courses.
Right. Like I suppose it's how to skirt that line between production of high level coaching expertise, mm-hmm. if we're moving towards professionalization, and reproduction of just the same process.
Yeah, I mean, of course, in the research with athletes, there has been a lot of concern about athletes being, again, going back to this narrative theory approach, that narrative or the stories surrounding sport and how athletes are finding meaning in sport are being increasingly kind of channeled towards this performance narrative. Again, going back to the work of Carlos and Douglas. And when coaching also becomes more professional, there is always a danger that we start narrowing the ways that we talk about sport coaching. And I think what is really important, and what many of my participants, they felt quite hurt that their meanings were not being heard. So there was somebody from above who was saying that now you need to start doing this and now you need to start doing that. And so when we are moving towards this more professional coaching, that also probably means that there are more resources for coach education. And I think those coach education sessions to have some thought and content on that meaningfulness aspect of the work, so people can think about it, maybe they can talk to each other and try to clarify for themselves what it is that they really love about sport. Most of the coaches I talked to said that they stayed in the sport for the love of the sport that they developed as athletes. And so just having this time and really putting more efforts to not just, you know, teaching skills and competencies and this is how you do sessions and all those things, but really spending this time on reflecting on your identity. And I know that coaching philosophy is very often part of these courses, but so we could also be thinking a little bit of this meaning dimension of it. And how does that meaning that I find from sport coaching, how does it shape the way that I see what are worthwhile goals for me as a coach or what it is that I want to achieve with my athletes? So I think whatever work we are doing, it is always good for us to sometimes have these reflective moments. If you're doing a PhD, what it is that you find meaningful, what it is that you don't find very meaningful, and how does that inform what you're going to do after your PhD is done, for example. Yeah.
Yes, touching on a personal note, I'm still trying to figure that out myself. It seems to me, because we've had a conversation previously, it seems to me that we're now shifting towards some of that other underpinnings to some of your work, which is existential learning theory. Could you quickly unpack that for us?
Yeah. So we had a nice discussion about that, and it's some work. I think it's published this year, but actually we wrote the article about 2 years ago. There's always this little delay with work being published. And so that was a really nice collaboration I had with Kenneth Agerholm, who's at Norwegian School of Sports Science, and Tatiana Riba, who I worked with for a very long time, and Jacqueline Allen Collinson, who is doing phenomenology and sociology at the University of Lincoln. And we came together and we started thinking of this. We all know about life skills. That's something that is, or when we start talking about learning in sport, often we think of these things that what are the things that athletes can take with them when they move out from sport, if we think of the talented athletes. And that has been a big question also for the ethical sustainability of sport, that if you take so many years of that athlete and then they get deselected, are they still having something that is valuable in their life? And I think the life skill idea is very much geared towards that. So maybe you didn't become a professional athlete, but you have very good goal setting and social skills and communication skills and time management skills and so forth. But so I think just reflecting on life experiences, I've been involved in amateur sport myself, I guess 15 years, and also like talking to athletes, doing these long life story interviews, that certainly there are other forms of learning that are taking place in sport. And we just wanted to think it through and propose a way of extending our ways of thinking about learning. And that's how we came up with that existential learning concept. I've been interested in existential philosophy and psychology for pretty much my whole academic career. And Kenneth Agerholm has worked on that extensively. So he has a really nice book, Existential Philosophy in Sport. Can't remember the full title, but it's about talented footballers and understanding that from an existential philosophical perspective. And so we came together, we started thinking of what are those other forms of learning. And basically existential learning is about how we learn about ourselves, who we are, about how the world is, about our relationships with other people, and just in generally what it means to be a human being. And sometimes these lessons are not very, they are not immediately useful, you know, so you cannot use them in a way to market your, if you write the CV, it's not something that you will list that you have like time management and those typical life skills. But existential learning is a lot more about how you find meaning and value in life, and the way that you learn to recognize your own values and your ways of being in the world. And in that sense, it can help you to make more authentic choices in your life, for example, and find out how you relate to other people. For example, athletes often talk about, famous or professional athletes talk about that they never know whether other people around them are there because of they are famous or whether they are there for other reasons. And so in our, when we did some empirical work, even talented athletes talked about that, that kind of dimension. Existential learning is about really finding out sometimes painful lessons about how we are in the world in relation to other people. And we drew on a German philosopher, Otto Bollnow. He has written about existential learning in education, and he has this concept of discontinuity. So for him, learning is something that is a discontinuous process, and learning happens when we run into something that is disrupting our everyday way of being and doing things. So, and there are other notions like limit situations or critical moments, or I mean, in a sport context, there's a lot of work on growth following adversity, for example. So when there are these moments in our lives when our kind of flow of normal living is somehow disrupted. With athletes, you would immediately think of like injuries and being deselected, but you can also think about these kind of positive surprises. So maybe you won a competition against all the odds. You've somehow found out that actually you are much better than you thought, or you got selected somewhere where you didn't think that you will be, or got offered a contract in a big club or whatever it is. So it's these moments when we think of, when what we assume who we are and what we can do, when that is somehow disrupted by something that happens to us. And so basically that was the point of roughly speaking, the point of that article. So to look into those types of moments that athletes, we could extend that to coaches as well, encountering sport that challenge the way they are in the world and the assumptions about the self, and how they might learn some kind of new insight about life, about their identity, and how they want to live their life.
And brilliant. And you spoke about before maybe unpacking those moments, both reflectively and introspectively individually, but perhaps also then with, you know, critical friends or communities of practice or whatever the sort of community around you is. But I got the sense that, and I just wanted to clarify, I got the sense from some of the examples that you gave of this, that those moments are largely organic. They're things that happen naturally. There's not things that are inorganic or kind of man-made, for want of a better phrase.
Yeah. So I think the starting point of Bollnow's writing is that you wouldn't, as an educator, you don't want to try to produce discontinuity in people's lives, or you don't want to create a crisis. You never know the outcome, you know. So that's not something that you want to do, but it's more about just the existential fact of being a human being. We are finite, we are fragile, we are forced to make choices, because also not making a choice is a choice, and we have to take responsibility for that. So simply the way that we are in the world, we are always confronted with situations, and these offer us learning moments. So you don't really need to be trying to produce them, because those are part of living. Yeah.
So again, as a coach, or perhaps as a coach developer, it's potentially being aware enough to support the athlete or the coach that might be experiencing those, and then also being aware enough to experience them ourselves, and know what we're bringing to the table.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have asked me, like, how can we use this for something? Like, how can it inform our applied practice or coaching work, or sports psychology work? And of course, I certainly see that people in the world, we have to be doing things. If you're a coach or a sports psychologist, that's your job, to do something with the young people. But so I think in this existential way of thinking, it's really important that we are not trying to fix the world, or it's a lot about trying to understand existence. So when young people encounter this type of discontinuity, it's very different for different people. What a coach could do is that if you know your athlete and you recognize that your athlete is going through something that seems to be a discontinuous experience, the coach can be somebody who can be that kind of critical friend, or help that athlete to explore the meaning of that experience, and whether that has changed the way they feel about themselves or their sport or their teammates and so on. So certainly it's not the coach or the educator or a sports psychologist can certainly play a role, but it's less coach-led or teacher-led than compared to life skill.
So what's next in your research journey you know, we've covered so much in the space of less than an hour with everything you've done so far, but I've no doubt that there's a lot more to come.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot more to come, and now I've been a little bit pooling some ideas together, and we are looking into writing. Just like I mentioned, there isn't so much work in a sport context, so just reviewing literature in relation to meaningful work and what are the things that we can learn from that as we are developing this trend of research. I'm talking to also a lot of philosophers who have, of course, thought about meaning a lot in sport, but maybe haven't done loads of empirical investigations around it. One of the big challenges for us is to learn and develop ways to study meaning. So in some ways, all qualitative researchers are tapping into meaning. All qualitative research in some ways is about meanings that people give to their experiences. But so how can we conceptually grasp what it is that we are trying to get into, and how can we ask people? Because what the phenomenologists often point out is that implicitly our lives have certain meaning structures, and that allows us to do things. So for example, for the both of us to actually show up and do the podcast, there is some kind of meaning structure underlying our choice to come here and do this today. But so if I would ask you now, like, what is the meaning of doing a podcast for you? It's not something very easy to articulate, or is it?
Well, certainly giving it some thought. I mean, it's a selfish endeavor, for sure, because it gives me the opportunity to speak to people like yourself. And then I suppose it was a case of, well, if I'm having these conversations, why not offer that out to everyone else?
Yeah. So you certainly have something to, that you already thought about it a little bit, and here we can see that you think that this can add some value to other people's lives as well. So again, we see that dimension, that very often when people talk about meaning, it's not, you started with a selfish thing, but in some ways also maybe some other people can find value from your podcast as well. But so yeah, in relation to studying meaning, and often we are not very good at articulating meaning, and coming back to those stories or narratives or discourses, often when we are not really sure what to say, we can easily fall back into these dominant discourses. And so we know that, you know, almost all the coaches told me that they're doing it for the love of the sport. And so if 20 people or 30 people all used exactly the same words, there has to be some kind of cultural narrative as well going on that they all share. And so when people, including ourselves, try to talk about meaning, we have to rely on these cultural resources, and for us to really think through how we relate to those. Are we just using them because we've heard it 1,000 times before, and it's something that is quite easy to just use that story and get over with that question, especially if you haven't reflected on that a lot. It's easy to get only these sometimes superficial answers, and that has been something that is noted in the literature on meaning in life. So people tend to pull these to like some quite predictable answers, which is not to say that these things are not meaningful, but just to say that we have a very specific cultural narratives also in sport that we always use. And so somehow to have people to reflect and somehow also get beyond those narratives, I think is quite important for us when we're trying to advance this field. So I think in the next, you asked me about what next, I'm trying to really read a lot more and get my head around how can I ask people about these things. I also find value in quantitative methods, which is not something that I've used a lot. And yeah, I've seen like plenty of very exciting work coming out in this area, like the meaningful physical education work with Deirdre Nykroining and Tim Fletcher, that has been around already for several years, and they're doing some really fascinating work when they are looking at physical education and youth sport as well. And so really learning from what is already out there. Other people have written about related topics, maybe not specifically conceptualizing in this way, and then trying to find some ways to empirically ask people about things in a better way.
Yeah, it's going to be such an interesting journey to watch, and as you said before, your publication takes a while, but no doubt there'll be more from you, and I look forward to reading it in due course. Nora, thank you so much. Loads to take away. Do have a last question for you, which is, if you could have an audience with one person, who would it be?
Oh yeah, I was listening to your previous podcast and the same question came, and I was just thinking, like, if you ask me, like, what the hell am I going to say?
So you've had preparation, and yet.
Yeah, so I had some time to think, and I'll just say that, you know, what I'm listening to an audio, like, I found it better to listen to audiobooks than read books recently, so I can go for a walk and also like spend some time outdoors. And what I'm now about halfway through is Simone de Beauvoir's The Second Sex. Like, I've only read some parts every now and then before, and it's like almost 40 hours and I'm halfway through. And so it's certainly a classic, and we know that a lot of things have developed and evolved since that work, but it's still really a classic. And if I could have audience with her, then obviously this is like an imaginary, of course we know that that's not anymore possible, but yeah, maybe that's my choice.
Sure. No, it sounds very relevant, and I'm sure it'd be an interesting conversation if, of course, we could have had it. If anyone wanted to reach out to you, what would be the best way to do it?
Yeah, I guess the easiest way is just to send me a message in the Twitter, or I have this meaningfulsport.com website. So I also respond quite quickly if you send me a message via the website. Yeah.
Superb. I'll make sure that the links are in the description so that people can do that. Once again, thank you so much and welcome to the tribe.
Yeah, thank you. It has really been a wonderful conversation.
That's it for episode 4 of season 3. I really enjoyed that conversation with Nora, who, as you'd expect, speaks so vividly about the various areas of research she has been involved in and conducted. Certainly got me thinking about the cultural narratives that may have impacted my understanding of my work as a coach and coach developer, and also of my own self-awareness. It's conversations like this that can be so powerful in unpacking meaning and making our work meaningful, and that's what our online space is about, a place to journey freely and loyally towards understanding and effective practice with the tribe. If that sounds like you, come join us over at thedevelopertribe.mn.co, and don't forget to subscribe to the pod, which goes out every Thursday. Thanks for building meaning with us and for being here on the journey. We'll see you again soon.